You're in the water loop.
Welcome to Waterloop, the podcast that explores solutions for sustainability and equity in water. I'm the host, Travis Loop. This episode is part of a series, Mississippi by Nature, that looks at the use of nature-based solutions to help the river and its communities. The series is supported by the Walton Family Foundation and outfitted by Patagonia.
No one has a bigger role in managing the Mississippi River than the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. I'm here at their headquarters in New Orleans to talk to them about this. I want to hear about the historic role they've taken, how they've really controlled the river with levees and other hard infrastructure to prevent flooding and preserve navigation. But they're starting to incorporate more engineering with nature, using nature-based solutions in this management of the river. I'm going to talk to Tim Axtman about this.
You're in the water loop.
Glad to have this conversation with you. Excited to talk to the Army Corps of Engineers. You all have a massive role in the Mississippi River. Could you talk a little bit about that and just what the Army's responsibility is when it comes to managing the Mississippi?
There's multiple missions when it comes to the Mississippi River. One, of course, is navigation, that extending from the Gulf, deep draft, up to Baton Rouge and shallow draft up into the Missouri and upper Mississippi and Ohio rivers. The other role particular to this area, of course, is flood control. Right? We're in a deltaic plain, and everything here is part of the deltaic plain. So managing flooding is kind of a imperative. More recent roles involve allocation of the river's resource for ecosystem restoration. That's rebuilding coastal marshes or barrier islands. The sediment is a valuable resource for that. And I'll mention going way back before we had the technical capacity, Louisiana Purchase, right? At that time, part of that was to be able to navigate and move goods from the interior to the Gulf and export or to other parts of the country. Navigation was the primary, right? Keeping the mouth of the river safe and open for navigation. The flood control and navigation expanded over time. At one point, and a lot of levees were constructed even before federal involvement. Plantation owners built small levees, individual levees. When the federal government became involved, then those systems started to become kind of unitized into a single system.
Was that in like the early 1800s-ish?
That would be probably mid to late 1800s.
Okay.
Moving up to the turn of the 20th century, when there was a debate over several things, how to actually maintain the mouth of the river using, was it dredging, using jetties, using dikes, and flood control, which is should it just be a continuous levee system containing the river? The flood of 1927 kind of weighed into that, and it was kind of a levees only system didn't really work well in that event.
Could you just explain that flood just a little bit more? What happened then? That was a big catastrophic flood.
It was a big catastrophic flood, and a number of levee systems breached all through the lower valley from Cairo south. And the floodplain of the Mississippi River is a fairly broad floodplain, and tens of miles wide in some locations. And a lot of that area flooded, which is what made it so catastrophic. It impacted so much area.
Yeah. Loss of crops, livestock, property, life.
Yeah. People were kind of forced into refugee camps because Mississippi River floods aren't kind of short duration events. They're fairly long duration events. So it took a while for that water to find its way back into the natural drainage and be removed. And at that point, as a result of that flood, Congress acted and created the Mississippi River Commission to kind of manage the overall operation of the, or oversee, not really manage, but oversee, and directed that we come up with a different plan. And the plan then involved levees and spillways, relief valves to let that water out. In our area here in New Orleans, we have the Bonnie Carey spillway that was constructed in the 30s following that event, which is just north of New Orleans, and the Morganza spillway, which is at the northern extent of what New Orleans district would cover. Just south of, we're probably going to talk about Old River Control. It's just south of Old River Control, but it predates Old River Control. And that spillway diverts water into the Atchafalaya Basin system.
And yeah, spillways are like if the river gets so high that it's threatening to go over the levees or break a levee, you kind of release that water out through these spillways and you're like, okay, we're going to flood this area to relieve the pressure.
Yeah, in the case of Morganza, it releases water into the Atchafalaya Basin, and the Atchafalaya River carries it then down to the Gulf of Mexico, in the vicinity of Morgan City, Louisiana. The Bonnie Carey spillway, which, and these are, in both locations were the sites of historic crevassing when the river would breach out of its banks or the smaller levees that were there. Bonnie Carey actually releases water into Lake Pontchartrain, so almost immediately into Gulf waters, although Lake Pontchartrain is generally kind of a brackish lake, more a little more saline than fresh. So, Old River, which is probably the biggest outlet, and it's perpetual. It's not just during floods. Was constructed in the late 50s, early 60s. I think in the late 40s, Harold Fisk, a geologist who did a study and identified that the natural connection between the Mississippi River and actually it flows into the Red River, which then flows into the Atchafalaya River, was increasing in the volume of flow it was taking. And the conventional wisdom based on some British studies and some channel bendway cutoff studies said that once the acquiring channel reached about 45% of flow, that was a done deal. The course was shifting.
So the Mississippi would, quote, jump
to the Atchafalaya
and go that way. And then what would that do to Baton Rouge and New Orleans?
Well, the concern was that with all the industry navigation that was there, it would leave them high and dry. The temporal components of that, it's still a big channel, even with that switch and silting in. It was still going to take a good bit of water. How much and how long was an unknown. But I think when Fisk did his work, the Atchafalaya was taking about 35% or 30% of the flow. It did at one point get to about 35, even after construction of Little River, because it was treated without operation, just a hard point that was going to regulate flow, but the difference in length from that point to the Gulf of Mexico was so drastically different, shorter in the Atchafalaya, the slope was continuing to acquire that flow. So then we had to go into a regulated operation to maintain a 30-70 distribution between the Atchafalaya, Red and Atchafalaya, and the Mississippi.
And so, again, post the 1927 flood, you have the Old River Control structure. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a newer era then of managing the river. And could you describe that, kind of what that looks like?
Yeah, well, now we have a pretty well-designed, regulated system. Everything is operated for thresholds and triggers. One thing that we see with some certainty is the system is is prone to change, right? Mm. That's how the natural system works. One of the downsides of more water going to the Atchafalaya Basin is it's a giant natural swamp and highly valuable as such, but the more water and sediment you put in there, the more it fills in, right? And it disappears. Conversely, as deltas build out or you starve them of water, they contract. One that's easy to find, and I think is kind of insightful at a high level, is the map of the historic deltas of the river over the last 10,000 years. Wow. So it's like 7 or 8 of those. And you can find them where it traces the outlines of where these deltas have been, and it overlays it on the fairly current landscape. And the takeaway I generally point out to people from that is it's what you don't see. Right? You see these big loops of where these deltas were or are presently. But if you look at what it's overlaying, deltas have been there in some cases two, I don't think there's anywhere I see three areas of overlap, but there's nothing there now, despite, and this is without any real human intervention in natural process, which tells you that isn't meant to be, that's not how nature works. It's not meant to be permanent. Restoration problem isn't about loss, it's about rate of loss.
And that's what, you know, the Army Corps has had the lead role in, is keeping the river flowing through Baton Rouge and New Orleans and these places and not doing all of that shifting.
Right.
So you have this kind of, you know, controlled. Levied corridor, 1,500 miles or so, right?
Yeah.
There's been a little bit of a shift or an attempt to try to do engineering with nature.
Right.
That's what the Army Corps calls it. You know, I'm looking at nature-based solutions. Those are kind of interchangeable.
Right.
Could you talk about why that has come up as a bit of a priority for the Corps?
I think, in particular to the coastal Louisiana, the New Orleans district area, there has been a recognition for some time in that rate of retreat, accelerating rate of retreat of the coastal landscape. And so part of that, and there's multiple forcing factors involved in that, but a big part of that is the availability of the river resource to get to those landscapes, which is, again, back to those deltas. They were created by the rise and overflow of the river. And so one of the areas of focus, we talk about coastal restoration, but really about reconnecting the resource with the landscape. And we've done that on some smaller scales, small diversions that initially looked at, well, how do we regulate water quality, right? So we don't see kind of a habitat shifting, you know, encroaching of more saline habitats into fresher areas.
What are the examples of those?
That would be the Davis Pond diversion and the Carnarvon diversion, which are actually built back in the late 80s, early 90s. And their focus was more on resource management, maintaining the habitat, maintaining the fisheries that utilize that habitat, because there's large economies associated with those as well. And they kind of predate the Corps having the environmental restoration mission. Difference being, okay, we do things based on the economic return for having done them. Well, with the advent of the environmental restoration mission, now we do things simply for the value of restoring the landscape, not necessarily the economy associated with that. And that made a change in scale. So now we look at larger type projects in terms of allocating resources that the state of Louisiana has been involved at in that. They're kind of the lead now. You know, the challenge is what's good for one part of the ecosystem isn't necessarily good for all parts of the ecosystem. There's large trades that go with that, and there are, of course, economies associated with that. So it's not without challenges. We continue to look at those. Currently, we're doing a reinvestigation of the lower river. Comprehensive management. How do we manage for navigation? How do we manage for flood control? What is the allocation of the, you know, in terms of flood control, we're trying to get rid of the water. Right? We're not necessarily trying to manage for application. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to get rid of the water.
So, but as part of this new look at managing the river, you talked navigation, right, and flood control, mm-hmm. but also resource allocation and the environmental side. That's really interesting that's part of what's being looked at. And then as a planner, you know, you're in the planning side.
Right.
How do you kind of take that engineering with nature or nature-based solutions and now think about that or look for opportunities to use it?
Well, I think a lot of it would probably involves more timing and temporal looks. We see some folks wanting less of the water and sediment impacting them. You know, navigation wants less sediment. Mississippi wants less water. Louisiana, in terms of helping to restore the coast here, we want more of it. Mm. Right? Water delivers the sediment. We want more sediment to do that restoration. The operational scheme for flood control is kind of fixed on how much water is there for how long. We turn this valve, we turn that valve. Can we add valves? Mm. Can we turn the valves differently? We tend to operate on, you know, that kind of rigid schedule. Mm. So we have to look at it in terms of, okay, can the schedule be more flexible? Mm.
And to what benefit?
To the benefit of making the water sediment resources available where it's desired, and maybe avoiding or minimizing where we don't want it.
So the engineering with nature for you all is really this big picture of, that means using the river to do what the river can do well for the benefit generally of nature with sediment or fresh water or whatever it is. Like, how can we build more flexibility to put the river in these other places, right?
Yeah. I mean, and that's how it looks here at the bottom of the system, right?
Yeah.
As you go up the river, well, it looks a little different, right? Hmm. There's nobody's saying, put water and sediment on my pasture or my cropland. There are areas along the river, Yazoo, which is also referred to as the Mississippi Delta in Mississippi, because it's a lot of low-lying area laced with channels. And there's other areas like that where one of the things we think about is, well, how could we use this resource for groundwater recharge, right? We have diminishing aquifers all throughout the Midwest. Is there a way to actually apply water where it would be useful for that without, again, impacting those economies that are also using that landscape? And again, it's about timing. Timing and location, duration, magnitude.
I love hearing that one. That's really interesting. Yeah. A total side note, just recently in California, and they're trying to figure out how to capture water when they get heavy rains, put it onto different lands, let it soak into the aquifer. It's amazing to hear, you know, in the water-rich East, if you will, a similar thinking.
Right. Yeah, you know, I not original. Louisiana came from the Great Plains, actually, where actual allocation of that water is a big thing up there for farming. You know, so I came from, well, how do we take this and grab it and use it to down here? Where, how do we get rid of it? Right, and now it's kind of circling. Well, how do we do both?
Yeah,
right. And it's not just about, when we look at management and planning, it's not simply about the high water when we've got a lot of it. It's also about the low water. You know, we just went through two fairly extreme low water years. Right? We were fighting the salt water moving upriver at the lower end here, but we're also challenged by maintaining navigation in the upper part of the river.
Is there, with dry years, wet years, stronger storms, kind of some of the changes that are coming from climate. Is that another layer of complexity that you all are having to deal with? Or is it becoming more challenging?
Well, it seemingly, yes, yeah, certainly when we talk about coastal restoration and, yeah, with sea level rise has been a pretty much well-measured quantity for some time now. Changes in magnitude and fluctuation of river flow, a little more challenging. That's not quite as clear how it's changing, or it seems to be more variable is what we see. I mean, I think you kind of see, if you look around nationally, evidence of that, where we went from, particularly on the West Coast, just went from extreme drought to what are we going to do with all this water, right?
Yep.
In a matter of 2 years. And there's been incidents of that in the central part of the country, I know. In the Great Plains, the Upper Missouri reservoirs have been years where, you know, reservoirs are down tens of feet, and in a couple of years, suddenly it's all back and more.
Yeah. Heard it called hydrologic whiplash.
Yeah.
That was a great example you shared about looking at potentially recharging, you know, groundwater in the middle area. Are there any other examples, you know, of kind of that different type of thinking, you know, that would kind of be engineering with nature aligned?
I think there's currently the state of Louisiana is pursuing some larger diversions. Mm. You know, in the context of the river and how much is there, maybe they're not that large, but relative to the landscape and the current use, large the mid-Barataria diversion, and that's a case of again trying to introduce sediment. Right, water is the vehicle, the product is the sediment, really that we're looking for to help rejuvenate that landscape, and those are things that were in studies that the Louisiana coastal area study we did with the state back around 2000. It was completed in 2005, just months before Katrina kind of changed everybody's priorities. So, you know, things, they've kind of taken that challenge on, and it is a challenge, right? It's you know, the building a landscape back, that's one of the interesting things about deltaic growth, right? When it's when it's building, it's not particularly productive, relatively speaking. It's when it's decaying that it's very productive. Well, we've enjoyed a very, very high level of productivity here in Louisiana because the system has been decaying, and now we've reached a point where we can't stand too much more prosperity, you know, almost. But that affects people's livelihoods.
Right? Sure.
That shift, and it's a dramatic shift. It doesn't happen where the decay happens kind of slowly and everybody adapts to it and may benefit from it. Yeah, the switch to, you know, restoration is fairly rapid, and it doesn't allow a lot of adaptability from the from a social standpoint, so it forces change.
Yeah. Well, Tim, very informative conversation. I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
I appreciate your time.
Waterloo.
Well, that was a very informative conversation for me. It was interesting to hear the Army Corps explain engineering with nature from their perspective. It's not really about these little projects here and there, but rather bigger picture, allowing the river to go into different places, finding ways to do that, and using the water as the vehicle for sediment. Loved that visual, and letting the river naturally do what it does out there to the benefit of the ecosystem and the people that use it. Really looking forward to continuing the journey up the river now and talking to some of these other people about their relationship and how they use the river and how they're helping it to improve.
You're in the water loop.